You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome into another edition of Mystery Crate. I'm Chris. I'm here with Chris, Billy, Jess, and Roy. As today, we have Olympics fever here on Mystery Crate. I imagine we've all been watching the Olympics in some capacity. And we kind of wanted to do deep dives on either lesser known sports or things that perhaps you didn't know about various sports at the Olympics. I guess we'll just start with general Olympics chat. Roy, how much Olympics have you enjoyed?
I've tried to watch every night. But for the sports that I'm going to talk about today, I don't think very many people know about these sports. But it's going to be short. So,
do you guys do the thing where you get the results early in the morning of stuff that happens, and then you watch in prime time with your spouse, and your spouse doesn't have the results, and then you act super informed, and it's like, I bet she's going to do well here. And then you just look really cool. I do that all the time.
No, my wife hates that.
So my view is I don't mind not knowing about what happened in the events. Like, there are a lot of people who get annoyed at NBC for tape delaying everything into their prime time thing. It's like, I'm not really that precious about knowing what the results are. Like, if I know something, I'll watch it again. And if I don't know something, I don't care that it happened 12 hours ago. Like, I don't need to be across all of the events as they happen.
Yeah, timeline police are the worst.
I did that with the opening ceremonies. I watched the opening ceremonies when they were live at like 11 a.m. And then I saw that it was rebroadcast at night. And I was like, I kind of know how this goes. They light the torch at the end. We're good.
The opening ceremony's boring, right?
I like it. It's like going on Wikipedia and just scrolling through all the countries. You learn a lot. You get to see all the cool outfits, too.
What did you learn from the opening ceremonies this year, if you don't mind me asking?
My retention's not great, but at the time, I definitely learned stuff.
It's weird watching like that and the games without fans, right?
So weird. It's very and NBC said they're not pumping in crowd noise, but some of the events there are sounds, and I guess it's like the teammates that are allowed to be there, like during swimming,
the volunteers
a cowbell
as well,
and or other athletes. Everything. Yeah. So there is some noise. It's not completely silent, but it is a little sad because I was watching beach volleyball the other day, and they're just playing in an entirely empty stadium, just empty seats all behind them, and there's no one there.
The one thing I marvel at watching gymnastics last night, when they do the floor routines, the way that they're able to get their back of their heel against, like, perfectly at the corner. You know when they do that? Because they always end up in a corner. And they just have the footwork down so pat where they never, because it's a deduction if they, like, if their heel touches the out of bounds. It's just so impressive, that part of it.
It's the Ray Allen shot, but in gymnastics, right?
Right.
It's like, it's backpedaling to a precise point that you know where it is, even if you're not looking at it.
Impressive.
How do we feel about the signage still saying Tokyo 2020 and this still being considered the 2020 games?
I like it.
Really?
It's just a nice round number.
They
have a good logo too. Can't let that go to waste.
Right. I think that's what it, because Euro 2020, the European soccer tournament, was also Euro 2020, and everything said Euro 2020. I just think it's like, we created all these logos, we created all these wraps, we created all the signage, and we're just gonna put a one over it. Like, I just think you keep it as such. And I think if anything, it's a marker of the historic nature of the event, which is it's the only thing that caused the Olympics to be delayed. And so 2020, and that's just kind of like our memorial of that.
I think you can do a lot with two zeros. It's harder to do some stuff with a zero and a one design wise. Two zeros, symmetry. It looks nice.
On the subject of fans, by the way, I actually think that the last 16 months, so in various countries, including in England, there are like fan unions almost that like have a legitimate voice at the table. I feel like the last 16 months have kind of been the year of, or like the year plus of the fan. because I think we see a lot of sporting events go down in ratings, go down in interest when there are no fans. And then like the NBA, for instance, in the finals, their numbers went up after fans returned. You know, like the bubble, in theory, was great basketball. But nobody cared because there was no atmosphere. And I've seen that the Olympics are almost, there's like half the interest that there was in the Rio Olympics on television. And I think that's largely fan-driven. I feel like fans have always been kind of, you know, placated. It's all, you know, it's all about the fans. But like, there should be a legitimate kind of, you know, we matter here. And, you know, when we go to sporting events and when they're filled with arenas and stadiums, they are more compelling than when they aren't.
I don't know if I agree with that take, Woody.
Why? Fans are unimportant in your view?
Yeah, because I don't go to that many sporting events, so I don't really like consider myself part of like the people watching, other than college football, you know? Like, so to me,
but you just noted that the beach volleyball feels useless without fans there.
I didn't say it feels useless. I just said it feels sad. Weird.
It's different in a worse way.
But I'm still going to watch it. Like, to me, I'll still watch it. I understand if other people think that it's I don't know, dampened a little bit because there's no fans. I get that other perspective, but personally, I will still watch it. I don't care if there's fans or not.
You two fight entirely too much. Like, come on. Let's get together and be nice to each other over here, Chris and Jessica. Come on.
I appreciate trying to broker a peace. I think we're just trying to have a sports debate. So then what else would you attribute the decline in interest in the Olympics?
I don't know. I just feel like there's a lot going on in the world right now. Can't keep track of it myself. I feel like someone will write a dissertation on this in 10 years and I'll read it and agree with whatever their conclusion is.
Okay, right. So our plan for today's Mystery Crate was to present sports that we either are interested in or wonder what the origins of, how did they arrive at the Olympics?
Origins?
Look, there's some, like, you know, if we did breakdancing, the origins of breakdancing is an Olympic event. Although I've actually traced back to the origins of swimming, like back to like BC era. So that just a little teaser from mine. So
we just basically have to be the Mike Tirico of this sport for like a 10-minute period, right?
Yeah, but also
10
I just kind of
minutes.
Ten minutes is ambitious.
Kiss my ass talking about 10 minutes.
We're trying to paint the picture for the people of what's going on in the Olympics with these said sports.
Okay, So in the interest of no one would want to go first, but someone has to. So
I'll go first.
Spin the wheel.
Okay, Chris. I can get the wheel going, or Chris
right,
can just go first.
Wheel. You know what? Let's spin the wheel. See where
okay,
it lands.
Okay, I have to get the wheel ready though. I wasn't prepared for a wheel. Yeah. Who knows if Vegan might start talking in the middle of the wheel? Yeah. You know, it'll be a
John
whole thing.
John Skipper might pop in. Roy, oh man, I thought I was going first.
You can go fuck yourself.
Huh? Wow.
No, I'm just kidding. So, first sport I'm going to talk about is skeet shooting. Vincent Hancock of Edenton, Georgia, he finished 19th in the Rio games, right? He was so disappointed with his finish. So he had a little vindication. He won gold in his event a couple of days ago. And he has now his third gold medal in skeet shooting. That is most all time. And it's pretty good.
So he went from gold to gold to 19th to gold again? What the hell happened in Rio?
I have no idea what happened in Rio. But it's a good vindication story. But, you know, it's the United States, and we're talking about shooting here, so obviously we have to be favored.
Is this like pull?
Yes, that's exactly. Well, yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Okay. Yeah, skeet, goddamn. Yeah.
So let's talk about skeet shooting a bit.
Okay.
Why is that an Olympic sport? And, like, I understand, like, biathlon is, like, a thing where you combine it with something else, but it's still just pull and shoot. How does one win at skeet shooting? I've never actually watched it before, so I don't know.
Yeah, so skeet shooting, you obviously know what skeet shooting is, obviously.
Yeah.
The little stone disc comes out, and you gotta shoot it, and you get like two shots.
It's clay.
Oh, clay. Yeah, well, clay and stone. Yeah, It's clay disc.
Does each competitor get 10 chances, and like if you get 10 out of 10, you move on. Like the top 8 move on.
Yep, that's exactly what it is.
Wow, Chris, you should have been our expert.
I just guessed.
Wait, is this like the Nintendo 64 game where
Duck Hunt?
Yeah.
Yeah, but without the ducks. Yeah, it actually does have skeet shooting on Duck Hunt. Yes.
I think there was. Yeah, I think there was a. Oh, yeah, I really love that game.
Have you guys ever? Like, I guess I'm assuming no one here has ever skeet shot.
Nope.
No.
Oh no. But
I have. Well,
you have.
I have. Yeah.
How'd you do?
I did it as a Boy Scout. I don't. I think maybe I hit one clay disc once. I wasn't great at it, obviously. And I'm assuming that we, as a Boy Scout, we weren't shooting actual bullets, but I don't remember because I was like,
I'm gonna go ahead and say that that's probably
true.
Chris Cody, you might be interested in this. They used to have skeet shooting on cruise ships, so like you could go and they'd shoot the skeets off the back of the boat and you'd go and you'd try to shoot them out of the sky. Yeah, like those were reserved for like days at sea. You could go skeet shooting, and then I don't know if it was the idea of just having all of these guns on the ship, or if it was the discs going into the ocean,
polluting the ocean,
alcohol.
For some reason, they stopped skeet shooting on cruise ships, but it used to be a thing that you could do.
Bring it back, Jack.
Probably not a great idea. Okay,
just turning into my dad. That's just what's happening.
I was just gonna say that. Now, would there be any interest in us going skeet shooting in a post-Olympics trip?
I'll go skeet shooting with you guys if you want.
Sure.
I would try it.
I'm good.
You're good.
Do you even know where in South Florida one could go skeet shooting?
I had a joke to make there.
It's got to be like the hammocks.
All right, Roy, equestrian, go on.
All right, so this was the dressage portion of the equestrian event.
What is that?
Basically, horse dancing.
Mm. Ooh, horse dancing. Oh, is this where the ponies do the thing?
I saw that.
They're like, that is amazing. Oh my God, it's the best. Okay, I love dressage. Tell us more, Roy.
So the United States earned a silver. It was the best finish in 73 years. Now, why is this an Olympic sport?
How do they get the horses to do that? That's the real question. This is amazing.
Exactly.
It's like they're not even doing it. It's like they're just go and the horse knows the whole routine. It doesn't seem like they're actually doing much. They just get up there and the horse does its thing.
Roy, I have a question for you. Does the human or the horse get the medal in this? Like, do they get horse medals or does only the human get rewarded for this?
The human gets the medal. The horse does not get the medal, but I'm sure the horse gets some sort of treat.
I would say horse shit, but yeah, either way, same thing.
It is horse shit.
Well, I really would like to talk to Ron McGill about this and see how he feels.
You want me to call him?
A question.
Here we go. Call him again. Second straight episode, we're calling Ron McGill. Here we go.
What are we going to ask him? What am I asking him?
How do you feel about the equestrian event, both dressage and the jumping?
Okay, let's do this.
What's the jumping called, Roy?
Equestrian. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Well, if one is dressage, you figure one would have a different name.
Yeah, right. I would think so. Right. Yeah.
You're our expert. You chose this.
Yeah, I chose dressage. I chose one half of the equestrian equation there.
Dummy up.
Maybe it's like pantsage.
Pantsage.
Hey, how the hell are you, brother?
Hey, Ron McGill. I'm back again with another animal question. All right, we're talking Olympics. What are your thoughts on the equestrian event where the horses seem to dance?
It's kind of in their bloodline. It's almost like an instinctive thing that they dance that way. I don't look at it as cruelty to the horses. They seem to, you know, whether it be the Pasafinos or whether it be the, I forget the horses they called it from Spain, the Lipizzaners. You know, that's just an athletic feat in that particular animal. It's not something that they're, you know, forced to do. It's not something they're beaten into doing or anything like that. It's just part of their business.
And who should get the medal in this event? The horse?
The horse should get the medal.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what we're saying.
Agree. Absolutely, the horse should get the medal. Please, come on. Give me a break.
It's horse shit, am I right?
Yeah.
It's horse shit. That is horse shit. That's exactly well put. It's horse shit that they don't put the medal around the freaking horse.
Nice.
What about the jumping portion of the competition?
Up there and just with his knees and his heels, he's telling the horse what to do, but the horse is doing it. You know?
We're all right now on our Zoom screen doing the little dance that the horses do where it like looks like they're like, it's really cool. Can you do
the dance,
too?
Ron?
Yeah, Ron, do the dance. We can't see, but do the dance.
There it is.
Yeah.
What about the jumping portion of the competition?
Not as athletic as the horses, but the horses should get the medal. I'm glad you brought that up, Cody. That's what I love about you, buddy. Nah. Always think about the animals.
You're so smart, Chris.
Thank you, Ron. I love you.
Thank you, brother. Take care. Love you more.
Bye. I felt like we ended good there, Roy. I didn't want to ask him about the jumping.
Competitive love in there. Love you more.
Yeah.
Now you hang up.
Yeah. Ronnie. That's what I call him.
Roy. Well done. And that is the equestrian dressage and skeet shooting. Now we spin the wheel and go again. Roy, where did it land?
Land on Chris. Talk, boy.
Hey, which Chris?
Oh, yeah, Cody.
Okay. Land on you. All right. I'm going to do water polo today because I watched a couple games of water polo the other day, and I just found it so delightful. I found it. It's something I wish that like me and my friends could do. Like I wish like instead of going to the basketball court, you know, you just like meet some friends at the pool and play some water polo for some exercise. And it seems like we have a little bit of a soccer situation with water polo where the women, the U.S. women are dominant. They won in 2012. They won in 2016. They are the favorites to win this year. The men are like middle of the road team. I watched them play against South Africa and they dominated. So I was thinking that they're really good, but South Africa is terrible. So the U.S. men, not as good as the U.S. women. The women did actually just lose to Hungary for the first time in a long time. But I'm excited. I'm excited about water polo. I kind of just like that's all the info I had right there. I just kind of gave it all to you. So now you guys ask follow-ups about water polo.
So how deep is the pool, first of all? Because they can't touch the bottom, right? Like they have to basically doggy paddle. And then I think there's a rule about how long you're able to hold the ball, but I'm not sure about that either. Because that's one of the things when I was looking into water polo a few years ago, that seemed very difficult.
I also read that the game is distinctly different above the surface of the water and below the surface of the water. Underneath. Yes. The surface of the water, apparently they beat the shit out of each other. But yes, above the pool, it just looks like they're kind of playing normally. I was going, where is the contact? Where is the defending in this sport? And apparently it happens underneath the surface of the water. And unless NBC shows it to you, you can't really see it.
Apparently the pool is 2 meters, so just over six and a half feet. That seems shallow. I thought it would have been deeper because these people, like the men I was watching, they seem large and they don't seem to be close to the bottom of the floor. So that's actually
that can't
optimal.
Be right. Well, that can't
but
be
no,
right.
if your head is above the water, then that is your head's like what 6 or 8 inches
right.
tall. So you'd have to be like over 7 feet tall to be able to stand and see above the water.
But when they show it, there's like a fairly sizable distance between the feet and the bottom of the pool.
Right,
it doesn't. I understand, but like, you know, it's like
a foot right here.
It seems like an Olympic sized swimming pool.
What was interesting to me is that when it's like a dirty sport, like it's physical. I know you were saying that, but it's almost like hockey and the game continues on when there's a penalty. So they'll call a penalty on somebody and somebody has to swim off and it's now 6-on-5, but the game doesn't stop. They just keep playing. So it's kind of interesting on that. I feel like it would be fun to play. I say that knowing that 10 minutes in, I would be dead.
But right. That's the part that seems not fun. Is that
it looks
seems
like a fun
exhausting.
Sport. It seems very fun.
How many players per side, Cody?
7, I believe.
Interesting.
I'm a little
plus a goalie. So like
yeah,
6
I think
and
it's
a goalie.
Six, yes, because when there's a penalty, it goes down to 6-on-5, but it's with a goalie. So 7. Yeah.
And do they play sets or do they play one match? And how many points do you have to score to win?
It's one game and it's timed. There's no set point total. It's 4 quarters and
it's
just
like
one
lacrosse.
Game. Yeah, it's just you play, you know, until the game's over and that's your game. So there's not multiple sets. Thank you for asking questions that I actually know the answer to. I'm feeling very informed about this.
Good job.
Go USA women, right? They're like, it's cool that they're dominant in that. I did not know that until a couple days ago.
What states is water polo popular in? I think I've heard of people playing it in the Northeast, but I don't know.
You know what?
Chris, to find that answer.
No, that's
on Wikipedia.
Right. I'm seeing it. Very popular in the Northeast.
Yeah. Who's really? The LeBron James of water polo?
I'm going to have to Google that one.
Yeah. LeBron James By the way, while he looks that up, the Olympic sized swimming pool, it's one of the only like Olympic references that we have in everyday life, right?
Yeah. I mean, like Olympic rings are used occasionally, but like everyday life, no. The Olympic-sized swimming pool might be the only one.
I also don't believe that people have Olympic-sized swimming pools, right? Like you often see things where it's like, oh, this university, this whatever has an Olympic-sized swimming pool. And it's like, well, I watched the Olympics and it takes them like 20 seconds to get from one end to the other while the camera's panning and I can't see one end of the pool to the other end of the pool, right?
Yeah, particularly when Ledecky runs the 1500 and she's lapping people and it's like she's going by people that are coming back on the previous lap.
I've seen what have been told to me are Olympic-sized swimming pools, and I'm like, there's no way. This pool is nowhere near the size of the pools that I see athletes compete in during the Olympics. I just don't believe it.
So the
University of Miami has an Olympic-sized pool. It's 50 meters.
You know? I don't believe it.
It is, but I've been in that pool. It's 50 meters.
Well, I believe that, but I don't believe that it's the same size pool that they use for the Olympics. Also, what do they do with these venues after the Olympics, right?
That's the best question.
These massive venues for swimming with like multiple Olympic-sized pools, they have to go largely I was at a lot of the time, right?
Ask the people, and they'll tell you.
I was at a Braves game a few years ago, and where the Atlanta Olympic, like, it, there's just still like a bunch of things that just go unused.
It honestly seems very wasteful.
Yes.
Yeah. That is why a lot of times
they don't want
citizens of certain countries and cities protest the Olympics coming there, because there's a vast amount of resources put into building these stadiums that are not put into alleviating poverty or feeding people who are hungry, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, ask the people Brazil of Montreal, Rio, all these cities.
Brazil's a very famous example of that, because one of the soccer stadiums they built in Brazil, you can Google this, in Manaus, is now, it's basically in the middle of the Amazon, and the Amazon has reclaimed it. And so they spent millions of dollars putting this stadium in Manaus. Yeah, Google it. There's like trees and stuff growing inside of it. Like, it hasn't been kept up at all.
I remember the U.S. played a group stage game there. It was like, and Jeremy Schapp was doing a report from the stadium with a giant insect like the size of his shoulder on his shoulder. Tremendous. By the way, to answer your question about where people play water polo, the U.S. women's team that you reference, only two players in the team are not from California. So it seems like California is our hub of water polo.
Wow.
However, there is one player who is a goalkeeper for the U.S. women's water polo team is from Miami. Her name is Ashley Johnson. All right, Chris, you good?
I'm good. I'm good. Chris, you good?
I'm good. Billy, you good?
I'm good. Roy, you good?
Move on to the next goddamn thing, please. Thank you.
Wow. Roy, it's as if you don't want to be doing this.
Yeah. Jessica!
Wow. That's me. Wow. Well, I chose beach volleyball because I love beach volleyball. I've decided. So, beach volleyball, it originated after the turn of the century. Some think perhaps in Hawaii, but also might have been in Santa Monica. Santa Monica is kind of like the beach volleyball hub of the United States. So, beach volleyball obviously is a form of regular volleyball, which was invented around the same time as indoor basketball. Funnily enough. So the difference between beach volleyball and indoor volleyball is that beach volleyball has two people on each side. They play on a beach in the sand.
The beach. I was going to guess that
and
part.
And instead of playing a best of five, they play a best of three. And the court is a lot smaller. Not a lot smaller. It's a little bit smaller. And you can move freely about the court. So in indoor volleyball, if you're in the back row, you can't move into the front row and vice versa, I believe. But in beach volleyball, you and your partner can go anywhere. You can even go on the other team's side if you don't interfere with them to make sure that you can save the ball. So the U.S. is very good at beach volleyball, the women in particular. They've won 6 of the 12 gold medals since beach volleyball became an Olympic sport in 1996 at the Atlanta Olympics. And you guys may be familiar with Kerry Walsh Jennings and Misty May Traynor. They're like the GOAT beach volleyball players.
Matt Traynor's wife, former Marlins backup catcher.
Wow, that's a fun fact. They were beach volleyball GOATs. And this is the first year that Kerry Walsh Jennings is not in the Olympics in a really long time because she failed to qualify. And two U.S. women's teams are in the women's tournament. One is her former partner, April Ross, and the other, and her partner this time around, is Alex Kleinman. They're the number two ranked team in the world right now, so they have a very good chance of winning gold. And the other team are one is 24 and one is 25, very young. Their names are Kelly Clays and Sarah Sponsel. So they're the ones that beat out Kerry Walsh Jennings's team in qualifiers. So they're the youngest beach volleyball team in U.S. history.
I'm watching actually right now on a TV screen men's beach volleyball, and I'm noticing that they each player on the team has a 1 and the other one has a 2. Do we know like how they decide which person's the 1 and which person's the 2?
No, I'm not sure. That's a very good question. There might not be a reason for it.
Maybe the person that like starts serving is the 1. I don't know. I used to be I was a middle school volleyball player, so I know some of the lingo.
They do make hand signals behind their backs. Sometimes you'll see the camera zoom in on their butts, and the hand signals will mean like
which side they're going.
Which side they're going, and it's one of those sports where you really have to like be vocal with your teammate. And the other thing about beach volleyball that makes it a little bit harder than indoor volleyball is that in indoor volleyball, you can like dink the ball over the net. And I read that in beach volleyball, you can't do that. You can only spike it over the net or like hit it over the net. You can't just like tap it over because that would be too easy.
Yeah.
So that makes it a little bit more difficult. So you see a lot of like the strategy is obviously to set it up so that you can make big spike.
Little bump set spike. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I have a question. It seems counterintuitive that in indoor volleyball, where it's easier to move because you're not running through sand and the court is only slightly bigger, why you'd have six players in indoor volleyball and two in beach volleyball. It doesn't seem like the beach volleyball players can cover nearly the real estate that the indoor volleyball players do. It seems like it would be the reverse, where you'd have six beach volleyball players per team and two indoor volleyball players per team. Why was there a reduction in the number of volleyball players when you're playing beach when there's so much more terrain to cover per person on a more difficult surface to run through?
Well, at the beginning, the origins of beach volleyball, they did play six per side. And if you go down the street on South Beach, I saw on my way to work yesterday, there are people who play beach volleyball six to a side. Mm-hmm. But in Olympic beach volleyball, it's two per side. And part of the reason for that is that the court is smaller, so two people can cover the ground as, you know, just by themselves. I don't know if that answers your question.
You know, once a year, Jess, there's a college beach volleyball tournament that happens at those courts.
Wow.
Yeah.
Spring break, I believe.
Wow.
Also, another question. Why are there some Olympic sports where you can play until you're 40 and there are other Olympic sports where you're a has-been at 22?
I mean, I think that just has to do with like how physical a sport is and whether you can maintain your skills, right?
But like, I'm surprised that like Kerry Walsh Jennings and Phil Dellhaus are still out here doing it in their 40s. When you'd figure like beach volleyball seems to be a young man's game.
I don't know. I think it just depends. Not to state the obvious, it depends on the sport. Like, you have 40-year-old basketball players, 40-year-old soccer players this year. I feel like there's only a couple sports, like maybe I wouldn't even say swimming. There are some older swimmers sometimes, but like
gymnastics
is the main one where if you're 22, you're like an old lady. I can't think of that many more that are that extreme.
Maybe we should have a senior division for the sports where you kind of flame out
Champions
early
League.
On.
Champions League.
No, but like an Olympic for seniors.
Golf, you can be old.
Yeah. Isn't Simone Biles 24?
Yes.
That's wild.
Yeah. And she calls herself the grandma of the group.
That's wild.
And she's 24. Yeah, I'm surprised that swimming is one of the, like, why would swimming be inherently something that only young people can do?
Stamina, maybe?
It's extremely physical, but so is beach volleyball, so I'm not really sure. It might be just because of the pipeline of players in swimming is a lot bigger. Like, there's more people competing for fewer spots, so it favors younger athletes.
Most of the swimmers that crush, though, are in their like mid-20s. Like, it's rare to see someone in their teens dominating swimming. Like Phelps, I think, was like dominating the butterfly at an early age, but he wasn't like, you know.
In researching my swimming bit, which I'll do in a second, spoiler alert, I saw there's a woman who won one of the swimming events at 17. So, yeah. I mean, it is possible to dominate at a young age.
It is possible, but I think, what is the age limit for the Olympics? Is it 14, 16?
It's in the mid-teens,
but I'm not sure exactly, because Simone Biles missed the cutoff by 1 month for London. She would have been able to compete in London had she been like a month younger, but I can't remember what the exact age was.
One more follow-up. How do countries decide which sports they're going to be good at? Because it seems counterintuitive that Canada would have a dominant beach volleyball team.
Why? There are beaches in Canada, you know.
Yeah, but it's cold there a lot.
You also only need to play on sand. It doesn't actually have to be on a beach. Like, you can put sand anywhere.
California, but compete for Canada in the Olympics.
I know, but you'd figure, like, you know, Portugal, Spain, Brazil is good
Brazil
at beach volleyball.
Is the best.
You know, but, like, you figure, like, you know, beach or, like, Croatia, I think, has a fairly significant beach culture. Like, you'd figure it'd be, like, for example, you know, I was watching the 3x3, the basketball. And apparently, like, Mongolia decided to pick up 3x3 basketball. And it's like, hey, we're going to try and be good at this. And I've always kind of wondered, how do you choose? Because the U.S. clearly attempts to be good at everything, right? But
right.
Other countries where they're just kind of selectively deciding, well, we'll be good at this, but we won't give it a go at that. Like, I wonder how that process goes.
Why does our men's soccer team suck?
Yeah.
Well, because we are generations behind attempting to be good at it. And
exactly. I think there's like lessons to be learned to apply that to all sports in other countries. popularity, I think, is a hard thing to gauge. Like, something can be really popular in California, but someone in Ohio has never heard of it.
But I mean, California is big enough and has an economy enough that, you know, you can, like, it can, if only California did it, like, if California had an Olympic team, actually, that'd be cool. If instead of, like, next Olympics, instead of we compete as United States, each state sends their own team, I feel like California would, like, finish in the top 10 in the medal count.
Isn't that what the U.S. championships would be?
No, well, maybe. I don't know.
You don't compete for your state, though, I feel like.
No, but, I mean, you'd... Like, if you were in college, you'd
be competing for college. We should have a United States Olympics where it's just only the United States competing amongst itself.
It's called qualifying.
I feel like the last thing this country needs is more state pride.
I know, but you're not, like you said, you're not representing your state. You're trying to qualify for the U.S. team. Spin the wheel again.
I'm confused.
Yeah, go ahead.
Beach volleyball, everyone.
Friends, a lot has changed over the years, personally and across our airwaves. But one thing that hasn't, the great taste of Miller Lite. So what is the best thing about the original light beer? Miller Lite sparked this debate in 1975, and we still haven't settled it. You know, for me personally, I recently bought a few six-packs of Miller Lite for my housewarming party, because that's one thing that's changed for me. I moved into a new house, and I brought some friends over, and we enjoyed the best light beer. Because Miller Lite keeps it simple, undebatable quality, great taste, only 96 calories. It's the beer that strips away everything you don't need and holds on to what matters most. A light beer that tastes like beer. Less filling and only 96 calories. The original light beer since 1975. You don't have to choose what's best. Miller Lite has great taste and is less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/crate. Or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Good job.
Jess, where did it land?
Landed on Billy.
Wow.
Wow, okay.
How exciting. Oh my God.
Guys, I want to talk to you about trampoline today.
Ooh.
And I'm going to be 100% honest with you, and I'm going to kind of break the fourth wall, if you will. It's Thursday right now when we're recording this. You're not listening to this on Thursday. What? Yeah, I know, Jess.
What?
But the women's final is on Friday morning at 1 a.m. So by the time this comes out, the women's final will have been completed. So
who won?
Can give you a preview. Well, that's the thing. I don't currently know who won because, again, for me, Chris, it's Thursday. Even though when you're listening, it's already been determined.
Billy, you don't want to do a pickup in the middle of the night and say, well, it actually turned out that so-and-so won.
You know,
yeah, do that, Billy.
Yeah, I'll do that. But in the meantime, we'll pretend as though I'm not going to do that. But I started looking things up. And I know what you guys are thinking. Trampoline. I can do that. I had a trampoline in my yard. I could be an Olympic trampolinist, right? Yep. Is that what you guys are thinking?
Yeah.
No.
What was everybody's go-to trick as a child on the trampoline?
I like to do the one where I'm jumping with somebody and I want to send them extra high into the air. Yeah. So I want to time the jump that gets them extra high.
I like to kind of be like flattened out in the air. Like I kind of, I'm fully horizontal and then you kind of pop back up.
So you like, does your back hit the ground and then you pop up there?
Sure, yeah.
Wow. Hmm. Impressive.
Jess?
Sorry, I was texting back Kate Fagan.
Oh, don't worry.
Roy, we're recording.
I know,
we're doing the podcast.
We were having a good conversation. I didn't want to leave her hanging. I'm sorry. I don't do this often. It just was one time.
What did Kate have to say?
I can't repeat that. I'm sorry.
I bet Roy crushed a trampoline in his youth.
I'm sorry, I was on Twitter. What happened?
Okay, we're doing this
going well. This is happening.
You guys ever play popcorn on a trampoline?
Is that where you sit crisscross and then people jump?
Yeah, someone gets in a little ball, sometimes crisscross applesauce, sometimes you get like in a cannonball formation, and then you have like three or four people jumping around you to see how high they can launch you up into the air. Ask Kate if she's done it.
I will. When I was younger, we used to have sleepovers on trampolines, and we'd sleep outside all night on the trampoline. Yeah.
Seems uncomfortable.
Dangerous also.
Did you guys live scared and you had like the wall on the side of your trampoline, or did you guys go no wall?
Net, no wall.
Yeah, of course.
What do you mean wall?
Wall or net?
There are some trampolines that, I mean, it is a net wall. It's like just to protect you from falling.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't like those. I like the trampolines where I can fall.
I actually found those, in theory, to be more dangerous than a regular trampoline. Yeah. Just because I was getting higher than some of those net walls, right? Where I felt like I may have accidentally jumped outside of it and I couldn't kind of get back. Because I always thought in my head, even if I jump outside of it, I can in the air swim back to being on top of the trampoline.
I don't think you could do that, Billy. Yeah.
Well, in my head, I could.
You gotta believe in yourself.
Exactly. Thank you. Thank you, Chris.
Trampolines are kind of dangerous, though, right?
They're
a little scary.
They are. I actually got a trampoline 1 year for my birthday. What I did is I saved up all of my money that I had gotten from like my birthday and like all kinds of like communion or something, whatever, right? So I saved up all my money. I was like, you know what? I want to buy a trampoline. Like, this is what I want to get. So I bought a trampoline. I went and I looked and I found one that I wanted. I went and I got it. I put it in the yard, right? And then that trampoline died when I found out
rest in peace.
Yeah. Well, homeowners insurance goes up if you have a trampoline. So after a certain amount of time, Google Earth took a picture of my parents' house where the trampoline was, where they would not have seen it because it was in a yard with a fence that you couldn't see through, a wooden fence. But Google Earth alerted the insurance company that there was a trampoline there. And they said, you know what?
What?
Cool trampoline.
Crazy.
Cool trampoline.
I didn't realize that Google Earth did sting operations. Well, this is ridiculous.
I would assume that maybe the insurance company is the one that noticed it. But they had never gone into the house. They'd never gone into the yard, but they were notified that there was a trampoline there and said, you know what? You can have this trampoline, but it's going to cost twice as much to insure your home. And my parents were like, Billy, we need to have a talk about this trampoline. And at the time, I was already kind of getting older anyway, so I understood. I was like, you know what? Maybe we can get rid of this trampoline because it does have kind of rusted springs and it's lost its kind of protective covering and maybe it's tearing a little bit. Maybe they have a point. Maybe I shouldn't have this trampoline. Yeah.
Did you guys ever have the sad single trampoline at your house?
Oh yeah, I had one of those.
Yeah. I don't know why I made it sad, but compared to the backyard trampoline, it is sad.
Those things are like exercise things now. Yeah. Like there's this whole like exercise industry where you sit on the little you don't sit on it, but you do like balance. I did it once. It was so hard. You do a squat and you jump the whole time while you're
like
lifting.
Core
oh my gosh. Yeah. It is the hardest workout because you're literally just in a squat jumping up and down the whole time doing like curls and shit. Mm-hmm.
I don't like those because they don't have much spring action.
They don't.
Right? They're very hard to bounce high on.
That's why.
Well, that's
sad.
Why you have to bend your knees like really deep to like get like a good like bounce. Mm-hmm.
Have you guys ever done like a pogo stick? Have you ever jumped on a pogo stick?
I've always wanted to be good at pogo sticks.
Wow. But yeah. Wait, hold on. Why?
Yeah, Jess. Yeah.
Because like the shit's pointless. People who are good at pogo sticks, like congrats on nothing. I don't care about your pogo stick.
Did you have like a bad experience with a pogo
stick? She's not wrong.
What did they do to you?
I just think they're pointless. Like it's not a fun activity. There's so many things when you're
little
that people say is fun and then it's just like it's not fun. I tried it.
You were bad at it, I'm assuming, with this animosity towards pogo sticks.
Just like maybe my neighbor was good and I was bad.
I mean, you're good for
it. Jealous, huh? A little jealousy there.
I feel like a pogo stick, even if you're good at it, you get like two or three jumps out of it, right? I mean, who's going a long distance on a pogo stick?
Pogo sticks are one of those things that it's more exhausting than just walking somewhere, like jogging or whatever, right? Like skateboards for me was always one of those things where a lot of people were like, oh, let me get a skateboard and do this. It's like, I'm not going to be Tony Hawk, right? So I'm going to get a skateboard. I'm going to fall. I'm going to scrape my knee. I'm going to, you know, bang up my arm, whatever. I'm going to have to wear a helmet. I'm never going to be good enough. And it also was so much more exhausting to kind of like push the skateboard and try to do these tricks than just simply walking from point A to point B for me.
So are pogo sticks in the Olympics? Like what's happened? How'd we end up here?
No, we were just talking about springy things. You know?
I think we transitioned from trampoline to pogo sticks. I'm also stuck on the notion that insurance companies just on Google Earth going through communities checking in on houses. That seems like bullshit.
Yeah. Insurance companies hire detectives to like hunt you down and make sure that they can't find like any specific thing that you're doing so that they can negate your claim. Like if you're hit by a car and you're like, hey, I injured my back, and then like an insurance company can hire a detective and be like, we saw you walking your dog yesterday, so your back's not that injured, we're not going to pay out your claim. Like that's what they do. Yeah. Maybe I'm exaggerating slightly because this hasn't actually happened to me, but I've heard horror stories.
Do you have cafecito?
Yeah.
A few, yeah.
what horror stories have you heard, just out of curiosity?
That's HIPAA. I can't.
Oh, yeah, that's
true. HIPAA. Yeah.
Anyway, so trampoline, 32 athletes, 16 men, 16 women. Each will perform two routines in qualifying. The first has very specific requirements, and then the second one is voluntary. And then I guess they add up the scores from those two, and the top eight move on. Now, because, as we discussed, the women's championship has already been decided. In the men's side, the People's Republic of China are favored to win two medals for the People's Republic of China. And at first, because I'm bad at reading, I thought that there was different Olympic trampoline activities that they gave away medals for. But then I just realized, no, they have two athletes, so they're getting two medals because each one of them would get a medal in the one competition. So that's what's going on. Now, the People's Republic of China is led by reigning world champion Gao Lei, which I think that's how you pronounce his name, who won the bronze in 2016 at Rio, and then Dong Dong, who won a gold, a bronze, and a silver in the last three Olympics.
All right, then.
Yeah.
So back to the way that the sport works, is the idea like you're doing tricks on a trampoline? Is that the idea, or is there some other, like you mentioned, meeting requirement? Like, what are the requirements?
To my understanding, yeah, the first one has specific requirements, and then the second one is more of a freestyle where I would imagine you could kind of get jiggy with it, as they say, and just kind of do whatever it is that you want to do.
I don't think they say that.
Well, no, that's a technical term in trampolining.
Oh, is it?
It is.
Wow. 10 points for getting jiggy with it?
Yeah.
I score.
What event do you guys think you'd be best at? Trampolining, by the way, just on, I'm a novice trampoliner, right? They appear to go, and I don't know that this is accurate, they appear to go 400 feet in the air at the Olympics, right? They go very, very high.
They're so clearing the Statue of Liberty
on
the trampoline.
Yeah.
I need to watch some highlights of this.
Yeah, they go very high. Do you guys go to Sky Zone?
No.
Or an equivalent of Sky Zone?
No.
Yes, you don't know what Sky Zone is?
No.
Sky Zone's essentially a trampoline park where you can go, and it's like an indoor trampoline.
Like a torn ACL.
Oh,
to
I've seen my friends 100%. With like little kids go to those all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a dangerous game.
It gives me anxiety anytime There's anyone like a posts a video pit, at that right? place.
There are foam pits. There are basketball hoops that you could kind of jump up to and dunk on. And then there There are rooms that are just trampolines. The entire floor is made up of trampolines for like 200 feet. And it's like obviously individual trampolines, because a 200 foot long trampoline, you wouldn't be able to bounce on. But there's a bunch of individual trampolines, like 200 feet long. And then the walls are angled with trampolines on the wall that you can bounce off of. But as Chris Cody was saying, torn ACL city. The adults are always getting injured there. Like, horrific injuries happen at trampoline parks.
Yeah.
It looks dangerous, I'm not going to lie.
It's
looks
fun.
Like my Achilles tendon would just explode.
Mm-hmm. It's really exhausting, though.
Yeah. Well, it's like the little, like, bouncy workout thing.
Oh, right? Yeah.
But they have really cool socks that you like get when you go.
Horses dance. Wow, that was a good horse sound right there.
Thank
or
you.
The horse's feet clapping, whatever.
And then dressage over here, yeah.
She's good. Jess and I have been watching for 10 minutes this video of this horse dancing, and it's a roller coaster ride. At first, I was impressed. Now I'm starting to feel bad for the horse. There's not even anyone riding this horse.
What?
I was just watching Gao Lei's routine from Rio 2016 that won him his gold medal. Holy hell.
I love that we're all just on YouTube.
The horses, man.
Where's this horse video? I don't see it.
Oh, sorry. That was a private message to Chris Cody.
Private messages to Chris Cody. Private messages to Kate Fagan.
I mean,
geez,
me and her, we were into the horse. We were doing the dancing in unison thing. That's why we were.
Wow, now Spindle I wheel. Got a private message.
Spin the wheel.
Oh my gosh. Folks, gather around. Everyone, gather around. Listen to these words. The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. With same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more, don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down. And if you're new to DraftKings, you gotta check this out. New customers, listen to me. You bet just $5 to get 150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use code Dan. That's code Dan for new customers, and you get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. That's insane. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Winningham!
Oh, wow. How about that? So I, on the show the other day, posited that I think that the other swimming strokes beyond the freestyle are bullshit. I don't understand why they exist. There's only one fast way to swim. Why are we doing the other ways? I guess like the backstroke. I was thinking about it in these terms. If you were in a pool swimming, which swimming strokes would you use? It would be a front, or what they, I believe they call it the front stroke, and then the backstroke. So why would you, like, you would never breaststroke. I guess if you're kind of paddling around, maybe you would. But if you're like, if you're trying to swim for speed, you would do either a front stroke if you're going forward or a backstroke if you're going back. The butterfly makes no sense to me whatsoever.
This, can I just jump in? This is so Whittingham. We were supposed celebrate an Olympic sport here, and you're basically telling an Olympic sport why they're wrong. That's what you're doing right now.
Yes, peak essentially. Whittingham. But here's what happened.
Wow.
I went through the history of swimming, and it turns out the breaststroke came first.
I don't know about that.
No, the breaststroke came first. Here's how we know. There are cave drawings from 10,000 years ago that show the first humans swimming. And it was basically a means of survival to get through water, and they were doing the breaststroke, right? So we begin with the breaststroke. There's a bloke in the 1860s who swims across the English Channel to get from England to France. Using the breaststroke, it took him 21 hours to travel the 34 kilometers between England and France. Then we go on from there. The first Olympics features the breaststroke in 1908. Then an enterprising fella decided, what if I did the motions between the breaststroke over the water so that I had less resistance rather than going through the water? I went over the water, and this guy was accused of all kinds of chicanery because he's flying way faster than everyone else is because he's going over the water and then doing the breaststroke over and under, and he's not meeting the resistance. Then other people started doing it, but then other people kept to the traditional breaststroke, and then the butterfly gets introduced as its own event in 1958.
Wait, I thought you were saying the freestyle came. Like, I was thinking you meant
freestyle.
No.
So what is now known as freestyle. I'm gonna have to pull it up here because I read this earlier. It's called something else. The actual technical term for the stroke is called something else. But so we're only dealing with breaststroke for the moment. Okay. So in the breaststroke, by the way, the regular freestyle is called the front crawl. Ah, it turns out.
So get over yourself.
In the breaststroke. The guy does the butterfly, so then the butterfly becomes his own thing, and it's only somewhere around this period that the front stroke gets discovered and becomes its own event. So actually, the front stroke slash freestyle was among the more later adapted versions of a swimming competition.
So you couldn't have been more wrong.
I couldn't have been more wrong. And it turns out that the front stroke, or the front crawl, excuse me, was kind of the Johnny Come Lately of swimming, even though it has ended up becoming the fastest and most efficient way to swim.
The breaststroke is the worst, right? We could just agree.
Yeah, I mean,
it looks the most awkward. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't seem efficient
for your elders.
It's not something you do for speed, right? If you were trying to swim, if you're trying to survive or just kind of paddle along in a pool, you might do the breaststroke. But if you're actually like, I'm gonna fly across the other end of the pool, the breaststroke is the least efficient way to travel, which is why I thought the idea of having it as a race seems stupid.
Tell that to Lydia Jacoby, who destroyed the breaststroke a couple nights ago.
17-year-old flying across the pool. Yeah.
What is the fastest race? Is it the freestyle? Like, what method of swimming is the quickest?
Yeah,
it is. It's like the sprint of swimming. Okay.
Yeah, you have the 50 meter, which, by the way, the 50 meter freestyle is one of the best Olympic events, right? Like, bar none.
I like the butterfly. I mean, Michael Phelps just like set a standard for that, but just the look of that, that's my favorite, just aesthetically to watch.
Kicks up
like
so
the,
much
the
water.
The relays are so exciting.
Yeah, relays are awesome, cheering
on their teammates.
Yes, yeah. So good.
I also find fascinating that the pressing of the button at the end of the swimming race is a legitimate part of the competition. If you don't get it right, or if you don't have a technique, I gotta punch this thing, because basically so at the end of the race you have to hit the wall, and that signals the end of your race. There's got to be a technique in that, and there might be shave seconds lost in there that might cause your race. I'm kind of curious how that's taught. Like, how do people decide in their technique for punching the wall at the end of a race?
Yeah. It's always amazing how the people, like the analyst for the swimmer, like he knows instantly if they got a good jump off. He's like, oh, not a good start. It's like, how do you know Rob that?
Gaines.
They all yeah, just jumped Rob in Gaines. The water.
They're usually former swimmers or something.
No, I know. I know that they're experts, but it's just like their ability to like see the stuff is crazy.
Last night with Caleb Dressel, well, two nights ago, I suppose, Chris, were you watching that where he jumped off and Rowdy Gaines was like, he gets so much power off the back leg.
Yes.
No one has a start like Caleb Dressel. I was like, look at that back leg. Dude's so fast. I don't know what I'm talking about, though.
I love the slow motion that they show of the get off of the start of a race, where it's just like the slow motion wiggle of them. Oh, so good.
You guys really love the Olympics, huh?
I've been watching every night. I'm really into it.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And every morning, too. I was watching Tuesday morning when Simone Biles backed out. I was watching that live and then we like went to work and
nothing is better for me than morning sport. I love morning sport. Just like rather than putting something on TV in the morning and let's like people talking, if I can just put the USA Network on and like right now I have it on and there's table tennis. It's just great. It's just great just to look up while you're working and just see that a sporting event is being played.
I was watching archery the other day, and after like 5 minutes of watching, I was like, I feel like this isn't that hard until I learned that the thing is like 70 yards away. The way the camera angle looked, it looked like it was maybe like, you know, 30 yards, 20 yards. I'm like, this doesn't seem that difficult. But then I was like, they showed the long shot of it. I'm like, okay, this is insane.
I'm watching BMX right now, huh?
Ooh,
this
where's
is
that
thing that's happening? This is
I'm watching ping pong on USA.
How's that a sport and baseball is not there?
Baseball is there. Roy Eddie Alvarez was the flag bearer. He's on the Marlins. The team that you're a big fan of that you complain when they don't send you stuff.
I didn't see the Olympic ceremony, so I didn't see the opening ceremony.
Also, the Todd father is on the Olympic baseball team this year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, good for him.
You know how we play the game of what sport could you do great in the Olympics? If you want to play the opposite of that, what sport like looks like, oh my God, I would be the worst at? It's ping pong. Like, good God, are these people good at ping pong?
Table tennis?
I would probably drown playing water polo.
Yeah.
Nope.
How many Olympic events do you think you may perish participating in?
How many are there? Like 26, 27? Yeah. I probably die doing like 25 of them.
Yeah.
I could probably do golf without dying.
Yeah.
And soccer. That's about it.
Yeah. That's about it.
I would die playing 3-on-3.
What? Come on.
Someone would block me to death.
Speed volleyball. Something would happen to you.
Figuratively, right?
Oh, I'd probably tear my entire ACL playing beach volleyball.
Okay, if you attempted to run a marathon, if you had to through the 26.2 miles,
I would die running a marathon.
There's a real chance you can die. But like most of the sports, I mean, if you attempted to do like gymnastic moves off a giant beam and you're doing twists in the air and you land on your neck, you can die.
Twisties.
Rhythmic gymnastics, though, which is basically like ribbon dancing, I think you're good. Unless you somehow tangle yourself up with the ribbon, I think you're good.
It's more than just ribbons on there. You got the ball as well.
I'm not seeing these people do anything on the horse when this horse is dancing. I feel like I could do this. You put me on top of the best horse in the game, and you say go. You let the horse start doing his little ankle dance. I feel like I could do this.
I think you would fall off the horse.
If I had to compete, if right now, like in an hour,
dangerous.
I have to compete with something in the Olympics.
Wait, hold on a second. With no experience on a horse?
Well, I mean, I've been on a horse before, but yes, no experience.
Google Christopher Reeves.
Short.
I'm not, but these things are just like, it just go. You give a little, with your inner heel, you give a little kick to the horse, he goes, and then boom, he starts dancing.
Billy, why did you do that to poor Chris?
Which
people can die. Well, to you.
Horses are dangerous.
Horses are dangerous. But like horseback riding is different than horse dancing, is it not?
Well, I think that he thinks he could do horse. Could you do horse jumping?
No, listen, I'm not Billy. I know you always think I do the thing where I think I can do everything. I know I can't.
You just said you could participate in the Olympics on something you've never done.
I just said if we had a made up game where it's like you have to perform in something in the Olympics in an hour. Throw me on that horse that does the little ankle dance.
Why wouldn't you just play golf?
Or baseball.
Because I literally think I would compete at a higher level, letting the horse do the work. My point is that these people aren't doing anything. The horse is doing it. In baseball, I would be terrible compared to Adam Frazier, the Todd father. Or Todd Frazier.
Chris.
There used to be an Adam Frazier in baseball.
Okay.
Chris, is like aren't people in the horse dancing like jockey sized? Like you're distinctly not jockey sized.
That's true.
I don't think the horse dancers are jockey sized. I think those are only the horse racers. Because Bruce Springsteen's daughter is.
I'm still watching this video from before, and now this thing's trotting around on this. This isn't it.
Person.
This
my head Wait, hurts. So Chris, my head hurts. So Chris got a private video, and Billy got a private video, but none of us got a private video.
Yeah. Pretty up.
My head hurts. Like you just made my head hurt, Cody.
Roy, what have you brought to this? Okay.
Wow. Jeez.
I brought you dressage. I brought you skeet shooting. That's what I brought you.
Actually, Roy brought the topic that you were just talking about, which was the horse dancing.
And also allowed us to call Ron McGill. So I feel like he brought quite a bit.
Yeah. So you can kiss my ass.
Wow.
An acrimonious ended to this mystery trade.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. Do we even like each other anymore, guys? I feel like this was a tense episode.
Next week, group therapy?
No.
Chris, I think you could do badminton.
You're so full of shit, Billy. If I would have said I could do badminton, you'd be like, no, you have. You're ridiculous. You have never played it before.
He would have gotten hit with the shuttlecock, so.
I can't talk. That's basically like what the rule is around here.
So group therapy next week.
No, I'm good. Thanks.
Talk to you guys then.
Friends, a lot has changed over the years, personally and across our airwaves. But one thing that hasn't, the great taste of Miller Lite. So what is the best thing about the original light beer? Miller Lite sparked this debate in 1975, and we still haven't settled it. You know, for me personally, I recently bought a few six-packs of Miller Lite for my housewarming party, because that's one thing that's changed for me. I moved into a new house. And I brought some friends over, and we enjoyed the best light beer. Because Miller Lite keeps it simple. Undebatable quality, great taste, only 96 calories. It's the beer that strips away everything you don't need and holds on to what matters most. A light beer that tastes like beer. Less filling and only 96 calories. The original light beer since 1975. You don't have to choose what's best. Miller Lite has great taste and is less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/crate. Or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.